pulled away, and he released her. She stumbled back, breathing hard, her pretty skin flushed. Though he did not show it, he felt the same. "You may blame me for the choices you made, but it changes nothing," Hades said, and felt he was challenging the real reason she came here, to tell him his bargain with her was unfair for retribution. "You are mine for 6 months, and that means if you write about me, I will ensure there are consequences." "Is it true what they say about you?" she said. "You heed no prayer, you offer no mercy." "Yes, darling," he thought angrily. "Believe what everyone says about me. No one prays to the god of the dead, my lady, and when they do, it is already too late." He was finished with this conversation. He had things to do, and she had wasted his time with her accusations. Hades waved his hand, and Adonis woke with a sharp inhale. He sat up quickly, looking dumbfounded. Hades found everything about him annoying, and when the mortal met his gaze, he scrambled to his feet, apologizing as he did and hanging his head. "I will answer no more of your questions," Hades said, looking at Persephone. "Minthi will show you out." He knew the nymph waited in the shadows. She had never truly left them alone, and he hated the smug look on her face as she came into his office from the underworld entrance. Perhaps that was what made him call out to his goddess before she left. "Persephone," he waited until she faced him. "I shall add your name to my guest list this evening." Her brows came together in confusion. She probably thought her invitation to tour his realm would be revoked after her behavior, but it was important, now more than ever. It was the only way she would see him for who he was, a god desperate for peace. Chapter 8. At the Island of Lemnos. Hades found Aphrodite waiting for him on the steps of her mansion on the island of Lemnos. It was a beautiful home, built by Hephaestus himself, a mix of modern lines, intricate filigree, and walls of windows that offered a view of each glorious sunrise and enchanting sunset. This island was a sacred place for Hephaestus. It was where he landed when Hera cast him off Olympus. As a result of the fall, he'd broken his leg, and the people of Lemnos cared for him. Even after he was invited to return, the god preferred to stay, as he had built a forge, taught the people ironwork, and gained worshippers. Hades always considered the fact that the god of fire was willing to share this island with Aphrodite a sign of his love for her, but he had never told her his thoughts. She probably would not listen anyway. "Come to surrender?" Aphrodite asked. She wore a dress that looked like the inside of a seashell and a seafoam robe rimmed with flowing feathers. Her golden hair gleamed, cresting like waves down her back. "I have come to speak to your husband," Hades replied.
"Do not call him that," she snapped, her eyes flashed with anger.
"Why? Has Zeus granted your divorce?"
"He refused," she said, and looked away toward the ocean, where the sun hung low in the sky.
She paused a moment, and Hades recognized the silence for what it was, time for her to compose herself. Whatever she was about to share was difficult for her.
"Even after Hephaestus agreed it was best."
Fucking Hephaestus, Hades thought to himself. The god of fire was worse than him at saying the wrong things.
"He expressed not a shred of anger when I told him what I'd done," Aphrodite continued, looking at Hades again. "He works a forge all day and has not an ounce of fire within."
"Have you considered that he wasn't angry because he expected it?" Aphrodite glared, and Hades explained. "You admitted yourself you've never had a marriage, Aphrodite. Why would you expect Hephaestus to mourn what he never had?"
"What would you know, Hades? You've never had a marriage either."
Hades suppressed the urge to roll his eyes. All of his conversations with Aphrodite ended with her flippantly rejecting his opinion or advice and throwing his own loneliness back in his face.
Why did I even try? Hephaestus is in his lab, Aphrodite said. She turned, bare feet moving over the marble steps. Hades trailed behind her. She did not enter her home, but instead turned down a walkway that cut through a garden full of bright tropical flowers and swathes of ornamental grasses. The path led to a glass bridge that connected the mansion to a volcanic island where Hephaestus kept his shop carved from the largest mountain. The workshop contained a forge on the lower level and a lab on the upper level, where he experimented with technology and enchantments. Over the years, the god of fire had created armor and weapons, palaces and thrones, chains and chariots, and people, among the most famous being Pandora, who he molded and sculpted from clay. She would later be used as a scapegoat, a way for Zeus to punish mankind. Hades had never asked Hephaestus about her fate, but he had a feeling it haunted the god to this day.
He's been working on a project. Bees, Aphrodite said as she walked, and there was a note of admiration in her voice. They are mechanical, disease-resistant.
Bees were dying at an alarming rate for various reasons: parasites and pesticides, poor nutrition and environment. The latter had more to do with Demeter than anything, as the earth tended to suffer when her mood was dark. Hades felt it was a strategic move on the part of the goddess, as a loss of bees meant less food production, which resulted in a reliance on the goddess of harvest for healthy crops. Hephaestus's creations would ensure mortals, and bees, were not at the mercy of a goddess. Conversely, his creations could be seen as an act of war against the goddess. Did Hephaestus tell you this? Hades asked, curious, because if so, that meant they were communicating.
No,
Aphrodite said, hesitating for a moment, as if she wanted to say something, but stayed quiet.
So you were spying? Hades questioned, raising a knowing brow.
Aphrodite pursed her lips.
How else am I supposed to learn what my husband is up to?
You could ask, Hades suggested.
And receive a one-word reply? No, thank you.
What did you expect to learn while spying? Hades asked.
A heavy silence followed his question. Finally, she answered.
I guess I thought he might be cheating.
Hades could not help it. He paused to laugh. Aphrodite whirled to him.
It isn't funny, she snapped. If he isn't fucking me, he's fucking someone.
Hades raised a brow.
Is that what you discovered while you spied?
Aphrodite's shoulders fell, and she looked away.
No.
She seemed disappointed, like she might have felt better if Hephaestus was distracted by women rather than things. Hades hummed, and Aphrodite gave him a bruising look before they continued to the entrance of Hephaestus's lab.
The cyborgs will take you to him, she said.
Hades narrowed his eyes, suspicious of her quick exit.
You're not going to leave just to spy, are you?
Aphrodite rolled her eyes and crossed her arms over her chest.
I have better things to do, Hades.
He considered challenging her reply, but decided against it, stepping around her and entering Hephaestus's lab alone. Inside, he found a cavernous room full of Hephaestus's inventions: shields, spears, armor, helms, pieces of detailed ironwork, unfinished thrones, robotic humans and horses. At the center of it all, working with his back bent over a wooden table, was the god of fire. Despite Hephaestus's modern inventions, his work area and overall aesthetic paid homage to his ancient roots. His blonde beard was long, his matching hair pulled back with a leather strap. He worked shirtless, exposing the scars on his skin, and wore a set of trousers that came to mid-calf.
Lord Hades,
Hephaestus said as he approached, though the god continued to work, soldering a circuit board. Hephaestus was probably the only god who used titles with other gods out of respect instead of disdain. After a few more minutes of work, Hephaestus put his tools down and pushed a set of clear glasses back on his head. He stood and looked at Hades with a pair of deep-set gray eyes. Hephaestus was huge, his physique chiseled like a marble statue. After landing on Lemnos and breaking his leg, it had been amputated. In its place was a prosthetic of his own design. It was gold, but minimalistic, made of geometric shapes. Even not being able-bodied, he was probably the strongest physically, and definitely the smartest of the gods. Hephaestus, Hades nodded, looking at the metal and wires scattered across his table. Despite already knowing what these pieces were for, he asked, "What are you working on?" "Nothing," the god said quickly. It did not surprise Hades that Hephaestus would keep quiet about his work. He had never been chatty, but after his exile and the scrutiny he had faced from other gods due to his scarred face and disability, he had become even more quiet. "It cannot be nothing," Hades said. "It does not look like nothing." Hephaestus blinked at the god and then answered, "A project." He cleared his throat. "What can I do for you?" Hades averted his eyes, looking around the room as he spoke. "I need your expertise. I need a weapon, one that will subdue violence and encourage truth." Hephaestus offered a hint of a smile. "Sounds like a riddle," he said. "You haven't heard the last part," Hades said. "It's for an Olympian." Hephaestus raised a brow. But just as Hades suspected, the god of fire did not ask questions. "I can create something," he said. "Come back in a day." There was silence for a moment, and then Hades said, "You know Aphrodite spies on you." Hades felt like a gossip. He was not sure why he was telling Hephaestus about Aphrodite's secret. Maybe he felt like it was revenge for her bargain. Maybe he was hopeful it would encourage conversation between them, except that Hephaestus did not react to the news, his expression passive, disinterested. "She is suspicious," he said. "Or curious," Hades countered, because it was true. "I suppose she can be both," he replied, turning his back on Hades and focusing again on his work. Hades waited despite the silence. And finally, Hephaestus spoke in a quiet, coarse voice. "She asked Zeus for a divorce. He will not grant it." "Is that what you want?" Hades asked. "A divorce?" He watched the god's profile, the way his jaw clenched and his fingers curled at the sound of the word. The god of fire looked at Hades then, his brows drawn together, and there was a sincerity within his eyes Hades had never perceived before. "I want her to be happy." Hades appeared at the center of a perfectly green meadow on the island of Sicily, where 50 pure white cows grazed. A few feet away, Helios's daughters, Phaethusa and Lampede, slept beneath a fig tree, their wheezing breaths disrupting the silence of the night. Hades had to admit he felt a little guilty that these two would incur Helios's wrath come morning, but not enough to leave their father unpunished for his vitriol. Just as Hades began to select the best of Helios's cattle to take with him to the underworld, his phone rang. It never rang. "Something is wrong." "Yes," he answered quickly, despite the chance he would wake the two sisters. It was Ilias.
"My lord," he said. "Lady Persephone is missing."
He had never felt such a terrifying sense of dread. A thousand emotions converged upon him at once, rage and fear and alarm. He wanted to demand to know why Ilias had not watched her better, wanted to know where he had looked, wanted to threaten to end his life if he found her in any condition other than pristine. But he knew Ilias, and by now he knew Persephone. Beautiful, defiant Persephone. She was not one to obey, especially when told. "I will be there in seconds," Hades replied and hung up. There was a beat of silence where Hades wrestled with every demon inside him. This fear was irrational, but it told him something important. If the Fates did take her away, the world would not survive. After a moment, he looked up, observing the white cows, and spoke. I had hoped to take my time selecting only the best of you to join me in my realm, but it seems I am out of time. When Hades vanished, so did every cow in the meadow. Chapter 9. A Game of Fear and Fury. As soon as Hades' feet touched underworld soil, he could sense Persephone. Her presence in his realm was like an extension of himself. It weighed on his chest just as heavily as the thread that connected them. He teleported again and appeared in the fields of morning, where shoots of white gladioli and orchids grew. The fields were once reserved for those who had wasted their lives on unrequited love. It had been one of the decisions Hades had made early in his reign and was born from his anger toward the Fates. If he was not destined to love, then he would punish those who had died because of it. He had since sent the souls who once resided here to other parts of the underworld, letting the field remain beautifully landscaped, as it was the view the souls were treated to on their way to the field of judgment. A few feet from where he had appeared, lying on the bank of the Styx, was Persephone. He attempted to absorb the scene through his rage. Persephone was on her back, her hair was wet, and she was covered with Hermes' gold cloak, the thin, metallic material clinging to her damp body. Hermes knelt over her, his lips curled in a smile. He was clearly interested in Persephone, and he watched as the god tapped his lips, spoke, and made Persephone laugh. That was when Hades decided to separate them. He sent a burst of power barreling toward the god, who went flying halfway across the underworld. Still, Hades frowned when Hermes did not land as far away as he had hoped, but the impact of his body hitting the ground was satisfying enough. Hades strolled toward Persephone, who rose and turned, craning her neck to meet his gaze. She shifted Hermes' cloak so that it draped over her shoulders, revealing the dress she had worn to his club, a thin silver number with a neckline that teased the curve of her breasts. Now that it was wet, it clung to them, accentuating the peaks of her hard nipples. Fucking Fates, Hades thought, as a fire burned a path down his chest, straight to his groin.
Why did you do that? Persephone demanded.
The god frowned, clenching his jaw. He could not tell if it was to suppress his reaction to her body or the fact that she was angry about Hermes.
You try my patience, goddess, and my favor, he replied.
So you are a goddess,
Hermes shouted enthusiastically, despite crawling from the pit his body had made upon impact. Persephone narrowed her eyes, and Hades realized that he had only succeeded in making her more frustrated by outing her.
He will keep your secret, or he will find himself in Tartarus, Hades promised, driving his point home by glaring at the god of mischief, who approached now, brushing dirt and grime from his person. Hades found it amusing to see the god in disarray, as he prided himself on his appearance, like many gods.
You know, Hades, not everything has to be a threat. You could try asking once in a while, just like you could have asked me to step away from your goddess here instead of throwing me halfway across the underworld.
I'm not his goddess, and you!
Persephone's tone was full of disdain as she made her way to her feet. Hades narrowed his eyes, unable to put into words how much he hated being spoken to in this manner before another Olympian, especially Hermes.
You could be nicer to him. He did save me from your river.
You wouldn't have had to be saved from my river if you had waited for me.
Right, because you were otherwise engaged, whatever that means.
She rolled her eyes.
Was she jealous?
Hades wondered.
Shall I get you a dictionary?
When Hades heard Hermes' gleeful laugh, he turned on the god.
Why are you still here?
Just as the words fell from his mouth, Persephone swayed. Without thought, he reached for her, catching her around the waist, and was surprised when a sharp moan escaped from somewhere deep in her throat. Pain. She's in pain. What's wrong? He was not used to the hysteria rising within him. It felt like a foreign thing splitting open his skin.
I fell on the stairs. I think I...
He watched her take a deliberate breath, wincing.
I think I bruised my ribs.
Hades could best describe how he felt as angry, but it was more than that. He hated that she had been hurt in his realm. It made him sick, frustrated, made him feel like he had lost control. He was surprised to notice Persephone's gaze soften, and after a moment she whispered,
"It's okay. I'm okay."
Except that she wasn't. She had fainted in his arms. "She has a pretty nasty gash on her shoulder, too," Hermes added. That same feeling of losing control consumed him, and it was heavy, like he had been dropped into a tar pit. He felt his jaw tighten to the point that his teeth might split. Then he lifted her into his arms as gently as he could, despite the chaos inside him.
"Where are we going?"
"To my palace," he said. If he could heal her, at least he could regain some sort of power over the situation, and she would be safe. He transported them to his bedchamber, and when he looked down at her, she opened her eyes. For a moment, she seemed unfocused. "Are you well?" Hades asked, and she met his gaze. When she nodded, he strolled to his bed and settled her on the edge, kneeling on the floor in front of her.
"What are you doing?" she asked.
He did not answer, but reached to peel Hermes' cloak from about her shoulders. She stilled at his touch, and he thought about telling her to breathe, but decided that maybe she was reacting to pain and not his presence. He was not prepared for what the cloak was hiding. Her shoulder was torn to the bone. Nasty gash? Hermes had grossly misrepresented this wound. Hades sat back on his heels, studying the damage. He would need to clean it before he healed it, or there was a chance infection would set in. Though it was rare for a god to become ill, it was not impossible, and he would not take any chances. Not with her. He let his gaze wander the length of her, searching for other wounds. The dead who inhabited the Styx were vicious, their claws and teeth sharp, and they shredded their victims. Persephone was lucky to have gotten out of the river with a shoulder wound. It could have been worse. His horror was real and painful, like hitting a brick wall. He had crafted his realm to discourage curious exploration, and yet here was Persephone, inquisitive and unfazed. It was not until Persephone drew an arm over her chest that Hades lifted his gaze to her eyes. He hadn't realized that he'd been staring. He scolded himself and came to his knees, bracing his hands on either side of her thighs. The movement brought him within an inch of her face. Even having almost drowned in the Styx, she still smelled like vanilla, sweet and warm. "Which side?" he asked quietly. She held his gaze for a moment, and he noted how she swallowed before covering his hand with her own and guiding it to her side. Something gathered in the back of his throat, and he wanted desperately to clear it, but couldn't. He wasn't breathing now either. He focused instead on her side, sending a wave of power from deep inside his body to his hand, letting the magic soak into her skin. She moaned and leaned into him, his head resting against her shoulder, and something akin to fire ignited in his stomach. Fuck. He took deep breaths through his nose and out his mouth, trying to concentrate on his magic and not his growing erection. When he was certain she was healed, he moved his head a fraction, their lips level as he spoke. "Better?"
"Yes,"
she whispered, and he noted how her eyes fell to his mouth. "Your shoulder is next." He stood, and when she started to look, he stopped her with a hand on her cheek. "No. It's best if you don't look. It would hurt worse if she did." Hades stepped into the bathroom and wetted a cloth. He was not gone long, but when he returned, he found Persephone had shifted to her side and lay on his bed with her eyes closed. He frowned as he watched her. While he understood why she would be exhausted, he did not like it. It made him worry that perhaps he had taken too long to heal her, or maybe she had been injured worse than he knew. He approached and leaned toward her. "Wake, my darling." As she stirred, he knelt beside her again, relieved to see that her eyes were clear and bright.
"Sorry."
Her voice was a hushed whisper, and it shivered through him. "Do not apologize." He should be apologizing. He had intended to advise her of the dangers of the underworld on their tour tonight, but he hadn't had the chance. He began cleaning her shoulder, infusing the damp cloth with his magic so she felt less pain.
"I can do this,"
she offered, and started to rise, but Hades held her in place. "Allow me this." He wanted this, to take care of her, to heal her, to ensure she was well. He could not explain why, but the part of him that desired this, it was primal. She nodded and he resumed his work. After a moment, she asked in a sleepy voice,
"Why are there dead people in your river?"
A ghost of a smile touched his lips. "They are the souls who were not buried with coins." He felt her gaze upon him as she asked, appalled,
"You still do that?"
His smile widened. "No, those dead are ancient."
"And what do they do, besides drown the living?"
"That's all they do." Their life in the Styx had initially been a punishment, a place souls were sentenced for not possessing coin to cross the river. Coin was a sign that a soul had been properly buried, and back then, Hades had no time for souls who were not to be cared for in the upper world. It was a painful memory, one that he had decided to rectify long ago. He had the judges evaluate all of them, and those who deserved respite were given water from the Lethe and sent to Elysium or Asphodel. Those who would have been sent to Tartarus were left in the deep. Hades was not sure what Persephone thought of his explanation, but she fell silent after that, and he was glad. Her questions had dredged up memories he preferred to keep isolated in the back of his mind forever. This was the second time her presence had unearthed something painful from his past. Would this be a common occurrence? Was this the fate's form of torture? Once he finished cleaning her wound, he focused on the healing. It took longer than her bruised ribs, as he had to cure tendon and muscle and skin. But once he was finished, there was no sign that she had been hurt. He released a short breath, relieved, and then placed his finger against her chin so that she would look at him, partly so he could ensure she was well, and also because he wanted to see her expression. "Change," he advised.
"I don't have anything to change into."
"I have something," he said, and helped her to her feet. He didn't know if she felt dizzy, but he preferred to keep a tight grip on her hand in case that changed. Plus, he liked to feel her warmth. It reminded him that she was real. He directed her behind a changing screen and handed her a black robe, noting the look of surprise on her face as she registered what she was holding. She arched a brow.
"I'm guessing this isn't yours."
"The underworld is prepared for all manner of guests," he answered. It was the truth, but he also could not remember who the robe belonged to.
"Thank you."
Her response was curt.
"But I don't think I want to wear something one of your lovers has also worn."
Her comment might have been amusing, but instead, he found that he was frustrated by her anger. Would he encounter this every time they discussed past loves? If so, the conversation would get old very fast. "It's either this or nothing at all, Persephone." Her mouth fell open.
"You wouldn't."
He narrowed his eyes, and a thrill shot through him at the challenge. "What, undress you? Happily, and with far more enthusiasm than you realize, my lady." She used her remaining energy to glare at him before her shoulders fell.
Fine.
While she changed, Hades poured himself a glass of whiskey, managing to take a sip before she stepped out from behind the partition. He almost choked on his drink. He had thought the silver dress she'd been wearing left little to the imagination, but he was wrong. The robe accentuated her small waist, the flare of her hips, and her shapely legs. Giving her that scrap of fabric was a mistake, he thought, as he approached and took her wet dress, hanging it over the screen.
What now? She asked.
For a moment, he wondered if she could sense his sinful thoughts. You rest. He lifted her into his arms, expecting her to protest, but he was relieved when she didn't. He would not be able to explain why he needed this closeness, didn't fully understand it himself. He just wanted to touch her, to know that she was full of life and heat. He lowered her to the bed and pulled the blankets over her. She looked pale and fragile, lost in a sea of black silk.
Thank you,
she said quietly, looking up at him with heavy lids. She frowned and touched the space between his brows with her finger, tracing his cheek, ending at the corner of his lips.
You're angry.
It took everything inside him to remain where he was, to not lean into her touch, to not press his lips to hers. If he kissed her, he would not stop. After a moment, her hand fell away, and she closed her eyes.
Persephone, she said.
What?
I want to be called Persephone, not Lady.
Another faint smile touched his lips. Lady was a title she would have to get used to. He had ordered his staff to address her as such.
Rest, he said instead. I will be here when you wake.
He sensed her breath evening, and when he was sure she was asleep, he teleported back to the Styx, appearing on the bank of the river. His magic flared, a combination of the anger and lust and fear.
Bring me those who smell of Persephone's blood, he commanded,
and as he lifted his arms, four of the dead burst forth from the Styx, the water rushing after them like the tail of a comet. The corpses shrieked, sounding and appearing more like monsters than the bodies of once flesh and blood mortals.
You have tasted the blood of my queen, and therefore shall cease existing.
As he closed his fists, the wailing increased to an almost impossible shrill, and the corpses turned to dust that was swept away into the mountains of Tartarus.
In the aftermath, Hades' ears rang, and his breathing was harsh, but the release was euphoric. Behind him, he heard Hermes' familiar chuckle. He whirled to face the god of mischief.
I knew you would return, he said.
He nodded toward the mountains of Tartarus.
Feeling better?
No. Why are you still here?
So rude. You have yet to thank me for saving your... What should we call her? Lover?
She is not my lover, Hades snapped.
Hermes was unamused, raising a pale brow.
So you just threw me halfway across your realm for nothing?
It's a sport, he replied.
Have your fun, and I'll have mine.
What's that supposed to mean?
Hermes might be the messenger of the gods, but he was also trickery and mischief. He liked fuckery, and he had been responsible for many battles between gods.
Only that I will enjoy watching your balls get bluer by the hour.
Hades offered a small smile, and after a beat, he looked at Hermes.
Thank you, Hermes, for saving Persephone.
He vanished before the god could grin. Chapter 10. Mind Games. Hades sat in a chair before his fireplace, drinking and watching Persephone sleep. The slow rise and fall of her body as she breathed soothed his nerves. His head swarmed with the events of the last few days, discovering his connection with the beautiful goddess, their subsequent bargain, her anger toward him for merely being the god of the dead. She might hate him, but she had let him get close to her today, and he was not sure he would ever be the same.
He had hoped to maintain a modicum of control over this situation the fates had woven for him, but he felt like he was losing that battle each time he looked at the woman in his bed. He had lost his composure twice in the span of an hour, first with Hermes and then with the dead in the river, because this goddess was curious, because seeing her bleed had ignited rage in him so hot he'd had no other place to expel it except at those who had injured her.
"Perhaps you should meditate," he heard Hecate's voice echoing in his head.
"Fuck meditation," he said aloud. Then Persephone stirred, and he stilled. She sat up quickly and then paused to close her eyes. Dizzy, he thought, frowning. When she opened her eyes again, they were bottle green and seemed to glow like pale light streaming through a muted window. She stared at him with those eyes for what seemed like an eternity. His body tensed beneath her gaze, his grip tightened around his glass, and the fingers of his other hand pressed into the supple leather of his chair. His cock grew hard, pinned against his leg and trousers.
"How long have I been here?"
she asked. Her voice was husky, and he wanted to groan. Instead, he managed a one-word reply. "Hours." Her eyes grew wide.
"What time is it?"
He shrugged because he did not know. "Late."
"I have to go."
Hades expected her to be angry or react with a sense of hysteria, but she didn't. She just sat there in a pool of black silk, looking beautiful and rosy and warm. "You have come all this way. Allow me to offer you a tour of my world." He stood and downed the last of his whiskey. Her eyes did not waver from his as he approached and drew the covers from her, revealing a sliver of skin between her breasts where her robe had parted in her sleep. It took everything in his power to avert his eyes as she clasped the robe closed. After a moment, he extended his hand. Her fingers slipped into his, and he found himself wondering when he would stop being surprised by her willingness to touch him. He guided her to her feet and waited for her to look up at him before asking, "Are you well?"
"Better," she answered quietly.
He traced the curve of her cheek. "Trust that I am devastated that you were hurt in my realm." Her gaze told him she was surprised by his words, or perhaps their sincerity.
"I'm okay,"
she whispered, but okay was not good enough. "It will never happen again. Come." He guided her to the balcony outside his room, where the forest of ash stretched for miles, meeting a wall of obsidian mountains. She wandered ahead of him, her fingers twined with his as she peered over the balcony. "Do you like it?" he asked.
"It's beautiful,"
she breathed as her gaze wandered over the landscape.
"You created all of this."
He nodded. "The underworld evolves just as the world above." He tugged on her hand, and she followed him down the stairs into the garden below. He felt a thrill of excitement as he brought her to the edge where lavender wisteria wept, where inky roses and pink peonies bloomed, and purple and red salvia twisted like serpents from darkness. Would she find this just as astounding? His answer came as soon as her feet touched the dark stone path leading into the garden. She wrenched her hand from his and turned on him.
"You bastard!"
Hades suddenly felt completely ridiculous. His mouth tightened. "Names, Persephone."
"Don't you dare! This is beautiful!"
So she was impressed, but why the anger? "It is," he agreed.
"Why would you ask me to create life here?"
She sounded devastated, as if seeing his realm and the flora that grew here drained her hope. Did she grieve for what she felt she had no power to create? With a wave of his hand, he dismantled the illusion. Revealing the truth of his realm felt like revealing the truth of his soul. The underworld was desolate, a wasteland of ash. "It is illusion," he explained. "If it is a garden you wish to create, then it will truly be the only life here." Hades called the glamour back and walked ahead. Persephone followed, and he wondered what she was thinking. Was she appalled by what he had shown her? Did she think less of the underworld just because its beauty was a creation of his own magic? He had not intended to give her a tour of the underworld to make her feel powerless, but he could feel her doubt and anger flare. As much as he hated being the reason for these feelings, he knew it was the only way she could reach her potential. One day, Persephone would tire of feeling defenseless, and his queen would rise from the ashes, a goddess. Hades stopped near a retaining wall at the back of his garden. On the other side were the asphodel fields. At his feet, the earth was barren and black. "You may work here," Hades said. If Persephone wanted to grow a garden, if that was her way of creating life in the underworld, then she would have to do it in the ashy soil of the underworld.
"I still don't understand," Persephone said. "Illusion or not, you have all this beauty. Why demand this of me?"
"Because it is the will of your soul," he thought. "If you do not wish to fulfill the terms of our contract, you have only to say so, Lady Persephone. I can have a suite prepared for you in less than an hour."
"We do not get along well enough to be housemates, Hades."
Her comment inspired a few salacious images, bare skin and breathy moans. He disagreed.
"How often am I allowed to come here and work?"
"As often as you want," he said, because after today he would ensure she never took that portal again. "I know you are eager to complete your task." Her gaze fell to the ground, and she bent to scoop up a handful of sand. It was not meant to nurture life, the texture like ground bone. She rose to her feet again.
"And how shall I enter the underworld?" she asked.
"I'm assuming you don't want me to return the way I came." It was the question he had been waiting for, and his answer made his body tight with anticipation. He tilted his head to the side, and she stared back, lips parting. It was enough of an invitation. He gripped her shoulders and pulled her flush against him, bringing his mouth to hers. He could have offered her favor without laying so much as a finger on her, but it was an excuse to touch her. Given that, he should have been gentle, but he found he was anything but tame. His body reacted like it was on fire and desperate to be smothered. He felt ridiculous. He had kissed and fucked, but he had never felt this, whatever it was. This burning desire, this desperate wish to claim and protect and to love. Then again, he had never kissed or fucked a woman destined to be his lover. Was the thread the reason he felt so uncontrolled? He urged her lips apart, his tongue gliding against hers, his teeth grazing her lips. She tasted like wine and salt, and smelled like a bed of sweet roses. Her body trembled, and he held her tighter so that there was no space between them, feeling all her soft curves against the hard contours of his own body. She was just as enthusiastic, kissing him with unabashed abandon. He got the sense that she would not have appreciated gentle, that she craved passion, rough and raw. Her arms wound around his neck, and he groaned, the sound coming from somewhere deep and long asleep. He moved, directing her until she was pressed into the stone. His hands drifted down her waist and over her round bottom, where he gripped and lifted her from the ground. With her legs planted around his waist, her heels digging into his back, his erection grinding into her most sensitive place, he let his lips wander, trailing her jaw, nipping her ear, kissing down her neck. Now and then he would pause and taste her skin, salty from the river. She arched beneath him, gasping until she took control, driving her hands through his hair, loosening the strands until it fell in layers around his face. It was his hair she used to control him, because as his hands slipped beneath her robe, grazing the hot and tender skin between her thighs, she gripped it harder, and it was that sharp pull that brought him back to reality. He had gone too far. He broke their kiss, breathing hard, struggling to contain his lust. He had meant to tease her, to gauge her desire, but it had turned into something more. Even now he continued to hold her, fighting the urge to begin where they ended. All he had to do was shift his hand ever so slightly, part her damp flesh with his fingers, and he would be inside her. But this was not how it should be. She had no reason to trust him with her body, no reason to trust him at all. He would not let her regret their time together, and when he made love to her, it would not be against a garden wall. That would come later. He lowered her to the ground, but did not release her. "Once you enter Nevernight, you have only to snap your fingers, and you will be brought here." He knew he had said something wrong when the color drained from her face and she attempted to shove him away, demanding, "Can't you offer favor another way?" "You didn't seem to mind," he pointed out, liking the flush that touched her cheeks and elegant neck. He wanted to tell her she should not be embarrassed, but when she touched her lips with shaking fingers, he lost his train of thought.
"I should go," she said.
Hades nodded in agreement. If she did not leave now, he would rescind his earlier statement. Fuck waiting to love her elsewhere. The garden is perfect.
"What are you doing?"
she demanded, as his arm tightened around her waist. He was silent, snapping his fingers and teleporting. When they appeared in Persephone's room, she was gripping his arms like a cat who had been frightened. He waited for her to adjust, her head turning slowly, and as she recognized her surroundings, she pried her fingers from his skin one by one. Persephone. There was one more thing she needed to know before he left her for the night. "Never bring a mortal to my realm again, especially Adonis. Stay away from him." Her eyes narrowed, glinting with defiance.
"How do you know him?"
"That is not relevant." He felt her attempt to pull away, but he held her in place. This was important. He had not saved her from underworld monsters just to have her hurt by mortal ones.
"I work with him, Hades."
He ignored the pleasure he got from the sound of his name on her lips.
"Besides, you can't give me orders."
"I'm not giving you orders. I am asking."
"Asking implies there's a choice."
His grip increased and he leaned over her, nearly bending her backward so their faces were inches apart. Again, Hades thought of her lips, her taste, her touch, and he knew she was having similar thoughts because she closed her eyes and swallowed. He spoke in the silence between them. "You have a choice, but if you choose him, I will fetch you, and I might not let you leave the underworld." Her eyes flew open.
"You wouldn't,"
she hissed. Hades chuckled, his breath caressing her lips as he spoke. "Oh, darling, you don't know what I'm capable of." Then he vanished like smoke fading into the sky. Chapter 11. A Game for a God. "I asked for a weapon, Hephaestus." Hades stared at the small, octagonal-shaped box the god of fire held out to him. It was beautiful, obsidian and inlaid with jade and gold, but it did not look like something that could restrain a god. When Hades met Hephaestus's gray eyes, he knew he had missed something. The corner of his mouth lifted, and he dropped the box at Hades' feet. In the next second, heavy manacles clamped down upon his wrists, their weight keeping his arms fastened at his sides, and when he tried to lift them, he found it was impossible.
"And so I have granted you chains,"
the god replied. Hades tried to lift his arms again, and his muscles tightened, veins rising to the surface of his skin, but it seemed like the more force he exerted, the more the chains oppressed.
"Tell me what you think of them," Hephaestus said.
"Brilliant," Hades answered, the word falling out of his mouth before he even had a chance to think.
and he remembered what he'd requested of the god of fire, a weapon that could subdue violence and encourage truth. Hades smiled despite feeling like a lab rat. Hephaestus's ability to create and innovate never ceased to impress. "This is a dangerous weapon," Hades said. But when he looked at Hephaestus, he knew something else was on the god's mind. His eyes were steely and menacing. Hades stiffened. He knew this look. He had seen it in the eyes of every mortal and immortal who had wished death upon him.
"Have you fucked my wife?"
The question did not match Hephaestus's cool composure or dispassionate tone, but Hades recognized himself in the god of fire and knew that beneath his calm exterior, he was raging inside.
"No."
"Elephthros ton,"
Hephaestus said, turning his scarred back to Hades as he was released from the restraints, the chains returning to the black box. Hades rubbed his wrists as the full weight of Hephaestus's question settled upon him. He had thought Hades was sleeping with Aphrodite, and he had believed it so thoroughly he felt he needed magic to get the truth. Hades scooped up the box and straightened, staring at Hephaestus's back. "Why ask me about Aphrodite?" He could not help the frustration in his voice. He knew why Hephaestus had asked, because, despite his feigned indifference, he cared about his wife and who she chose to sleep with. He loved her, and yet he chose to be miserable, chose to be passive.
"Have I not revealed enough of my shame?"
Hephaestus asked.
"It is not shameful to love your wife."
Hephaestus said nothing.
"If you feared her infidelity, why did you release her from the bonds of marriage to begin with?"
The god tensed. Clearly, he did not know what Aphrodite had shared with him. That on the eve of his marriage to the goddess of love, Hephaestus had released her from all obligations of that marriage.
"She was forced to marry me,"
Hephaestus said, as if that explained everything. Though it was true, Zeus had arranged their marriage to keep peace among those who wanted Aphrodite for a wife.
"You didn't have to agree," Hades said.
Hephaestus's muscles rippled, and the god of the dead knew he had angered him. Yet when he spoke, his voice was calm, void of emotion.
"Who am I to reject a gift from Zeus?"
It was a simple comment, but it spoke volumes about how Hephaestus viewed himself, unworthy of happiness, of favor, of love. Hades sighed. In truth, it was not his place to get involved in Hephaestus and Aphrodite's relationship. He had enough to worry about as it was with the Fates, Sisyphus, and Persephone.
"Thank you, Hephaestus," Hades said, lifting the box, "for your time."
He teleported from the cavernous lab, appearing in the sky over the ocean, and let himself fall through billowing clouds. Hades landed on Earth, on the island of Atlantis. The impact shook the ground and marred the marble at his feet. Around him, Poseidon's people, mortals who called themselves Atlanteans, screamed. It took seconds for his brother to appear, bare-chested and wearing a terugis, a decorative skirt made of leather strips. Gold cuffed his forearms. His wavy and blonde hair was crowned with gold spears, and two large spiral Markor horns jutted from the top of his head. The god of the sea looked like he was prepared for battle, which was fair. Hades only ever visited when he had a score to settle, and this time was no different.
"Brother,"
Poseidon offered a curt nod.
"Poseidon," Hades said.
There was a moment of tense silence before Hades asked,
"Where is Sisyphus?"
Poseidon smirked. "Not one for pleasantries, are you, Hades?" Hades tilted his head to the side, and as he did, a great marble statue of Poseidon cracked and split. As the pieces crashed to the ground, more of Poseidon's cult, who had stopped to stare, ran for cover, screaming.
"Stop destroying my island!" Poseidon commanded.
"Where is Sisyphus?"
Hades demanded again. His brother's eyes narrowed, and he chuckled.
What did he do? Tell me it was good.
Hades' anger was acute, and for the first time since he had asked Hephaestus for a weapon to contain Poseidon's fury, he realized it was just as much meant for him as it was his brother. Tired of wasting time, Hades tossed the box at Poseidon's feet. In the next second, the god of the sea found himself ensnared in chains. For a few seconds, Poseidon blinked in shock at the metal around his wrists. He pulled at them, trying to snap them with his strength, muscles bulging, veins popping, but no matter how hard he tried, they remained.
What the fuck, Hades? He snarled.
Tell me where Sisyphus is hiding.
Hades' voice was brutal and rough.
I don't know where your fucking mortal is, Poseidon spat. Release me!
Hades could sense Poseidon's power rising with his rage. The sea around the island churned violently, lapping at the edges of the landmass. Hades only hoped he could get the answers he was looking for before his brother's violence was unleashed. Poseidon would not grieve the loss of his people if it meant revenge against him.
Careful, brother. Your rage may add worshippers to my realm.
It was the one thing he could say that would at least give Poseidon pause.
The god glared, his chest rising and falling with his anger, but Hades felt his magic ebb. Given his frustration, Hades had forgotten that the chains drew truth from their captor, which meant that Poseidon truly did not know where Sisyphus was. He needed to ask a different question.
How do you know Sisyphus de Ephora?
Hades asked. Poseidon roared, clearly trying to fight the words the magic pulled from his throat.
He saved my granddaughter from Zeus.
Ah, now they were getting somewhere.
And did you reward him?
Yes,
Poseidon hissed.
Did you grant him favor?
No.
What did you grant him?
A spindle.
A spindle? A relic, just as Hades suspected. It explained how Sisyphus had been able to steal lives from another mortal.
You gave a mortal a fucking spindle?
Hades snarled.
Why?
For the first time since Hades had been interrogating Poseidon, he seemed to speak with ease as he said,
To fuck with you, Hades. Why else?
It was a petty reason, but a very Poseidon reason, nonetheless.
I tell you what, though, I'll make a deal with you, Poseidon said. A bargain, as you call it.
Those are brave words coming from someone who has no power to fight the magic holding them captive, Hades observed.
I'll help you find Sisyphus. Hell, I'll lure him here myself. If.
Hades waited, hating how slow Poseidon spoke, how much time he wasted.
If you release my monsters from Tartarus.
No.
Hades did not even need to think.
He would not relinquish any of the creatures who lived in the depths of Tartarus.
They did not have a place in the modern world, and definitely did not have a place in Poseidon's hands. The ground began to quake, and the ocean rose up on all sides of the island, welling in the cracks Hades had created in Poseidon's marble. He had pushed too hard. Hades cast his magic like a net, enveloping the landmass in shadow to keep his brother at bay.
You lost your monsters because you tried to overthrow Zeus, Hades said through gritted teeth.
Poseidon's magic was heavy, and he felt like he was being buried alive as it battled against his wall of shadow.
Now you are angry because there were consequences for your actions. How childish.
The disgust Hades felt for his brother in this moment fueled the strength of his magic, though Poseidon's display was not surprising. His life had been a sequence of childish outbursts that had dire consequences for those involved.
You claim to be a king, and yet you follow the rule of Zeus, Poseidon spat.
I follow my own rule,
Hades said. It just doesn't align with your will.
Hades didn't often agree with Zeus, but at least the god of the sky believed in the existence of a free society. He believed that all gods had their role in the world and that they should keep order within their specialty and nothing more. Poseidon was not of the same mind, and if he could rule supreme, he would. The problem was he had two equally powerful brothers who could, and would, and had, stopped him. Hades closed his eyes and reached into his darkness, into the part of himself that had been born to war and chaos and destruction, to the part of himself that was desperate for control and order and power. He drew upon that desperation, that will, that strength, coaxing it to the surface until the power that welled deep in his chest exploded in a stream of shadow. It tore through Poseidon and his wall of water, and the god went to his knees, the ground shaking beneath him. The two gods breathed hard and glared at one another, and as the water settled around them, Hades spoke. I have saved your people and your island. I am due a favor. There was a chance Poseidon would not agree, that he would go to the same dark place Hades had to retrieve power, but Hades hoped the god of the sea would realize what was at stake, more than just monsters. If he fought, it would mean the end of Atlantis, his people, and perhaps his freedom. Zeus had taken that before. Nothing would stop him from doing it again. Think, Poseidon, do you really want your empire to end over this mortal? He could see the indecision warring in Poseidon's eyes. At this point, it wasn't about a mortal anymore. It was about Hades and the fact that he had challenged, and overpowered, Poseidon in front of his own people.
Poseidon.
A musical, feminine voice called the god's name. Hades' gaze shifted to Amphitrite, Poseidon's wife. Her eyes were large and round and the color of peridot. They were eerie to behold and set in a delicate face. Long ginger hair shrouded her curvy body like a cape. She was beautiful and deeply in love with her husband, despite his infidelity. In her presence, Poseidon's anger evaporated, and his body slumped. Hades watched as Amphitrite hurried to him, and the god of the sea grasped her, chains rattling as he did. They held one another close, before pulling apart and staring into each other's eyes. Something passed between them, a wordless communication born from years of partnership. After a moment, Poseidon looked at Hades. A favor, then. He agreed. You will help me capture Sisyphus, Hades said, since you are responsible for this blight upon the world. It was like asking for Poseidon's help, and Hades hated it, but it was probably the easiest way to get Sisyphus off the streets and the spindle out of circulation. Iniquity, Hades said, tomorrow at midnight. Sisyphus will not come within a mile of your territory, Poseidon said, and not that quickly, especially after your gross display of power. It will be a few days, and it will be in my territory. Hades did not like the idea of meeting on Poseidon's turf. It meant that he had more at his disposal, both in power and people. But the god of the sea was right. It was best to meet in a place that would not draw suspicion from Sisyphus. Fine, Hades said. Eleftheros ton. As Hades spoke the words, Poseidon was released from his chains. Amphitrite helped the burly god to his feet, which was almost comical, considering she was half his size. Poseidon drew her close, his large hands nearly spanning her waist, and kissed her. Hades averted his eyes, confused by their display of affection. If his brother loved his wife so much, why did he pursue other women? They seemed lost in one another for a moment, Poseidon's anger toward his brother momentarily forgotten. Hades used his magic to reclaim the small black box Hephaestus had given him.
There was no way he would let something so useful and so powerful slip through his hands. As the box came to land in Hades' palm, Amphitrite looked at him. She might be his sister-in-law, but he knew very little about her, save that she could calm the seas and Poseidon. But right now, Hades felt her fury.
"I think it is time you left, Lord Hades," she said.
The corner of his mouth tipped, and he nodded before vanishing. Chapter 12. A Game with a Goddess. Hades returned to the underworld and summoned Ilias. He was exhausted after expending so much energy keeping Poseidon's magic at bay, but he had a plan to locate Sisyphus. It was the first time he had felt any kind of success since the beginning of this ordeal. He poured a glass of whiskey and drank quickly, approaching the window to look out upon his realm, spotting Hecate walking with Persephone. The two goddesses talked and smiled and laughed, and Hades could not help thinking how perfect Persephone looked in his realm, like she belonged there, like she should have always been there.
"My lord?" Ilias asked.
Hades turned his head and found the satyr beside him, brow raised.
"Enjoying the view?" he asked, amused.
Hades would have liked it better if he had realized Ilias had arrived.
"I have a job for you," he said. "Poseidon gave Sisyphus a relic, a spindle to be exact."
The satyr's eyes widened.
"A spindle? Where did he get that?"
"That is your job," Hades said. "Trace it."
"And what would you like me to do when I find it?"
Usually, Hades gave Ilias free rein over how he dealt with illegal dealers. The satyr would organize raids, burn shops, destroy merchandise. On rare occasions, he found something worthy of joining iniquity.
"I want their name," he replied. He would be visiting them personally. "Consider it done,"
Ilias bowed, but he did not leave Hades' side, looking outside, nodding toward Persephone and Hecate.
"She is curious about you," he said.
"She is eager to examine my flaws," Hades corrected. The satyr chuckled.
"I like her."
"I am not seeking your approval, Ilias."
"Of course not, my lord."
With that, the satyr departed, and Hades watched until Persephone was no longer in view, but he could feel her presence in his realm, a torch that scorched a path across his skin. He considered seeking her out, but thought against it. As much as he hoped to change Persephone's opinion of himself, he also needed her to find solace and friendship in his realm. Not needed, wanted. He wanted her to find solace in his gardens, to walk the paths of the underworld with Hecate, to celebrate with the souls. He wanted her, too, one day, to think of the underworld as her home. A strange feeling overcame him, one he was familiar with and hated. Embarrassment. If anyone could hear his thoughts, they would laugh. The god of the dead, hopeful for love, and yet he could not help it. When he had taken Persephone into his arms in the garden, when he had kissed her, he had suddenly understood what their life could be, passionate and powerful. He wanted that desperately. And despite her dislike for him and his bargains, she could not deny her desire. He had felt it in the pull of her fingers through his hair, the mold of her soft body to his, and the desperation in her kiss. His head started to rush, and a warmth spread through him that went straight to his cock. He groaned. He was going to have to expel some of this energy. He shed his jacket and shirt and headed for the asphodel fields.
"Cerberus, Typhon, Orthrus, come," he called, and turned in the direction of his approaching Dobermans.
They charged through the grass, determined in their stride.
"Halt,"
Hades commanded when they drew near, and the three obeyed and sat. Cerberus sat in the middle, Typhon on the right, and Orthrus on the left. They were handsome dogs, with glistening black coats, pointed ears, and wedge-shaped heads. The three were never apart, always traveling in a pack,
guarding the underworld from intruders or unwelcomed deities who lived outside the gates of his realm. Sometimes Hecate recruited them for various punishments, commanding them to feast upon innards or maul a deserving soul. Hades preferred playtime.
"How are my boys, huh?" he asked, roughing up their ears.
Their demeanor changed from fierce to playful. The dogs' tails wagged, and their tongues lolled out of their mouths.
"Punished a lot of souls today?"
He took some time to scratch behind their ears.
"Good boys, good, good boys."
He summoned a red ball from thin air. When the dogs saw it, they sat straight, panting with anticipation. Hades grinned, tossing the ball into the air once, twice, the dog's eyes following with rapt attention.
"Which one of you is fastest, huh? Cerberus? Typhon? Orthrus?"
As he called each Doberman's name, they offered a growling bark, impatient for the chase. Hades smirked, feeling a little devilish.
"Stay," he commanded, and then threw the ball.
Fetch with Cerberus, Typhon, and Orthrus was not like fetch with normal dogs. Hades' strength was great, and when he threw the ball, it went on for miles. But his Dobermans were unnaturally fast, able to travel across the underworld in minutes. Hades waited until the ball disappeared before turning to the dogs.
"Fetch."
At his order, the dogs took off, muscles working powerfully. Hades laughed as the three raced to find the ball. They returned in no time, running in sync, the red ball clutched in Cerberus's mouth, who brought it obediently to Hades and dropped it at his feet. He continued playing with his dogs, running in circles through the meadows, working off his frustration and lust until he felt breathless and sweaty. He tossed the ball once more, free from the burden of his feelings, when he turned and found Persephone standing in the clearing, watching him with wide eyes.
"Fuck."
She was beautiful, and his eyes traveled the length of her, unashamed. She had flowers in her hair, camellia, if he had to guess, and they threaded through long strands of curly blonde locks. She wore a blue tank that was cut in a low V at the neck, drawing attention to her breasts. Her shorts were white, revealing her long legs, legs he had fastened around his waist just days ago. As his eyes traveled back up her body, he found that her gaze had made the same descent, and he smirked. He might have challenged her to deny her attraction, except the goddess of witchcraft was here and marching straight for him.
"You know they never behave for me after you spoil them," she was saying, casting her arms out in the direction where Cerberus, Typhon, and Orthrus had disappeared. Her complaint was playful, mostly because the three were quick to listen, especially if instructed to return to their work. He grinned.
"They grow lazy under your care, Hecate. And fat. She liked to feed them."
Hades' eyes slid to Persephone.
"I see you have met the goddess of spring."
He did not miss how she stiffened at the title.
"Yes, and she is quite lucky I did," Hecate said, eyes flashing. "How dare you not warn her to stay away from the Lethe?"
His eyes snapped to Persephone, who was trying hard not to smile. It seemed she enjoyed hearing Hecate scold him, but Hecate was right. He should have warned her not to approach any of the rivers in the underworld. The Lethe, in particular, was powerful, drawing memories from souls like air. What would he have done if she had touched it, drank from it? He shoved the thoughts away.
"It seems I owe you an apology, Lady Persephone."
She was surprised. Perhaps she had not expected him to apologize, but she stared at him with those fiery emerald eyes and parted lips, and he found his desire for her renewed. Then the horn of Tartarus sounded, and he and Hecate turned in its direction.
"I am being summoned," Hecate said.
"Summoned?" Persephone asked. "The judges are in need of my advice." The judges, Minos, Rhadamanthus, and Aeacus, often summoned Hecate to sentence certain souls to eternal punishment, mostly those who had committed crimes against women.
"My dear," Hecate said to Persephone, "call the next time you are in the underworld. We'll return to Asphodel."
"I would love that," Persephone said with a smile, and it made Hades' heart beat harder.
She enjoyed her time with the souls. Good.
When they were alone, Persephone turned to Hades. "Why would the judges need Hecate's advice?"
He cocked his head to the side, curious at her demanding tone, and answered,
"Hecate is the lady of Tartarus, and particularly good at deciding punishments for the wicked."
"Where is Tartarus?"
"I would tell you if I thought you would use the knowledge to avoid it." But given her history, he did not trust her.
"You think I want to visit your torture chamber?"
"I think you are curious and eager to prove I am, as the world assumes, a deity to be feared." All things that would probably be confirmed if she found her way to his eternal torture chamber. She gave him a challenging stare.
"You're afraid I'll write about what I see."
That made him laugh. "Fear is not the word, darling." He feared for her safety. He dreaded her assumptions. She rolled her eyes.
"Of course you fear nothing."
"Oh, darling, you know nothing," he thought, as he reached to pluck a flower from her hair. He twirled the stem between his fingers and asked, "Did you enjoy Asphodel?"
She smiled, and the honesty of it left him breathless. "I did. Your souls, they seem so happy."
"You are surprised?"
"Well, you aren't exactly known for your kindness."
Hades' lips flattened. "I'm not known for my kindness to mortals. There is a difference."
"Is that why you play games with their lives?"
He studied her, frustrated by her question and the way she asked it, like she forgot that mortals came to him to bargain, not the other way around. "I seem to recall advising that I would answer no more of your questions."
Persephone's inviting lips parted. "You can't be serious."
"As the dead."
"But how will I get to know you?"